Changes in college football. The Atlantic Coast Conference voted yesterday to extend formal invitations to the University of Miami and Virginia Tech to join the league. The move would expand the ACC to 11 teams, including two of college football's prime powers. It would virtually gut the Big East, the league to which Miami and Virginia Tech currently belong. Commentator John Feinstein joins me now. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
In just a few weeks, the ACC has gone from expanding to 12 teams to 13 teams and now 11 teams.
You know the commercial that's on TV right now where the two girls are wrestling on the floor over the cell phone?
I've missed so much on TV.
Well, there's this commercial and these two girls are wrestling over a cell phone and they destroy their living room. That's the ACC and the Big East right now, except that the two girls have a little more dignity. This is all about, as always, I know you'll be shocked to learn this, money and power in college athletics. The ACC believes, correctly, by bringing in Miami and Virginia Tech, it will strengthen its position for its next television contract in 2005 and for the Bowl Championship Series negotiations in 2005. And in the process, it essentially will eliminate the Big East from the Bowl Championship Series, which means that pie will be now cut up instead of 63 ways, 57 ways, meaning there's more money for the ACC schools to play with.
Even if the Big East replaces those schools with worthy institutions?
Well, but in football terms, Miami and Virginia Tech are two of the top 10 football programs in the country. About the only way the Big East could survive as a football conference, it will certainly go on as a basketball conference without these schools because neither one of them is a power in basketball, but the only way it can survive in football is if it can somehow convince Notre Dame, which plays basketball in the Big East now, but is independent in football because it wants all the money. Show me all the money, not some of the money when you're part of a conference. And Notre Dame, as you know, has its own network television contract. Getting Notre Dame to play in the Big East is the only way the Big East can continue to be viable as a national football conference.
Now, Virginia Tech was part of a lawsuit brought by several Big East schools to block expansion.
That's what makes all of this, you know, so amusing, that Virginia Tech was standing up with its Big East brethren saying, this is a terrible thing, we're martyrs, how can conferences go around raiding one another? The Big East, by the way, has five members currently that it raided from other conferences. So everybody does this to everybody else. But the minute the ACC offered them the invitation, which came about only because Virginia Governor Mark Warner said to the president of the University of Virginia, John Castine, if you expand and don't invite Virginia Tech, you might have trouble getting funding in the legislature for a few years. Pure political blackmail. Excellent move by Warner. Then Virginia Tech turns around and says, oh, well, maybe the ACC is not such a bad bunch of guys after all.
You don't think this is a very good idea?
I don't think it's any worse of an idea than Napoleon invading Russia or New Coke. The ACC doesn't need to do it, even though it claims it does. As long as it has Florida State, a true power, it will not be eliminated from the BCS. And when you start dividing that pie 11 ways instead of 9 or 12 ways, whatever the final number might be, even though you think you're going to make more money from football, which you will, you're going to lose money in basketball. You're going to lose money in TV contracts because you're dividing everything up 11 ways instead of 9. So even financially, put aside serious questions about whether this is right for the student-athletes and ethics and all that, even on the money level, it's not that good a move.
Thank you, John.
Goodbye, Bob.
The comments of John Feinstein, author of Open, Inside the Ropes, at Bethpage Black, the story of the first U.S. Open played at a true public golf course.